Now, there are other options at times when it comes to lawsuits. I'm assuming one of the early options is get your facts straight. Now, I'm not a lawyer, which is why we bring on lawyers or guys who play lawyers on TSN, like our next guest, Eric Macromella. Mac, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm the Corbin Burnson of TSN.
Well, I was going to say more like Jackie Childs, really.
I am uncomfortable with that, although I do know how to rhyme, and I find your statement to be egregious, extemporaneous, and altogether outrageous.
Yeah, well, you know, I could see, because the reason I say you're Childs is because Nielsen's kind of, well, no, he's not cool as Kramer, but he's somewhat aloof like Kramer.
He is, and you know, Dusty Rhodes suffered this burn, and he put some balm on the burn, and I told him, I didn't put the balm on, but he put the balm on, and what happened? The burn went away, so as did the lawsuit.
You've been in court a lot. So let's say you come into court and you sit down and you realize the plaintiff's case and you're going through it and it's like, there's a pretty egregious error here that states as one of their defense points that Gordie Howe, A, had a disease he doesn't have, and B, is dead when he's alive. Like, does that not ruin your case before it even starts, Eric?
Yeah, you know, and I was trying to figure out what was the root of that he passed away in 2009, according to the complaint. And I read Colleen's Wikipedia page, which is littered with reference to Gordon. I think that they got confused. There are other mistakes. Sidney Crosby's name is spelled incorrectly in one instance. There are references to like movies like Youngblood and I think Friday the 13th. Just some stuff that I've never seen before. I was talking with a lawyer friend of mine here, and we're just kind of saying, okay, look, this thing lacks sophistication, no doubt. This is not your typical pleading. Does it hurt you? Well, it doesn't, and it does. It doesn't hurt you from a substantive legal point because your case is still your case. That is not going to undermine the substantive strength of your case. However, you have two problems. Number one is credibility. That is immediately undermined when you're getting the name or the status of Gordie Howe, arguably the greatest player of all time, incorrect. Number two is you have filed a class action lawsuit. You have named nine plaintiffs. The whole idea behind a class action lawsuit, Jason, is to recruit more players. Mm-hmm. That's how it works. That's what you did in the NFL concussion lawsuit. You file and then get more and more players, so your lawsuit is more robust, has more strength, and more traction. If you're an NHL hockey player thinking of joining an NHL concussion lawsuit, is this the one that you join? Well, maybe not, because they're getting a lot of stuff wrong. On top of that, the actual lawsuit itself, while it's really long, it reads like this bizarre, amateurish movie script. It's got a ton of pictures in it, which you don't normally see, or you don't see in lawsuits. Again, names being spelled wrong, sort of an odd narrative. It's weird. I'm not going to lie to you. Now, I was the one that broke the story that this lawsuit was filed. So from that perspective, I'm very happy.
Well, the funny thing is, Eric, as far as I know, this firm did not fall off the legal turnip truck yesterday. You know, I think they were involved with Enron. How do you mess it up this bad? Is there some intern out the door already on this one?
No. Well, you know, I saw that they were involved in Enron, and that's making its way around. Don't forget, a lot of law firms were involved in suing Enron. Look, I cannot speak to the merit or strength of this law firm, and I don't want to. That's not my job. I'm not throwing anybody under the bus. I'm just speaking specifically to this complaint. These lawyers can be terrific lawyers. I know a ton of bright lawyers in the U.S. and around the world that I work with. So I'm not saying that they're not a good law firm. All I'm saying is this complaint is atypical. It is unusual. And perhaps it would have benefited from a second read. That's all I'm saying. Fair? Fair.
Yeah, no, I think it's fair. Now, it looks like, so this group of nine guys gets together, and I know people are saying, well, why weren't they part of the original one that Gary Lehman was in, and then he stepped out of because he said, well, it's obviously stuff I don't want to be in. Do you think, from a legal standpoint, it benefits players to come in individually, Eric, or is it better to come in a group of 50, 100, 1,000? What's better?
Well, there's a couple of things you raised there. So first thing is, why didn't Mike Peluso and company join the class action lawsuit out of Maryland with Gary Lehman and my good friend Morris Titanic? And by my good friend, I don't know him. I'm just saying that. There's no prerequisite that you join an existing class action lawsuit. In the NFL, you had over 220 separate class action lawsuits. So you can just file your own lawsuit. from that standpoint. Sorry, and what was the second question you had, Jason?
Does it benefit you in a, like, is there power in numbers in a lawsuit
yes.
like this?
Yeah, there absolutely is. If you can get some, it helps if you get brand name players, but whether you get them or not, if you can collect a high number of players, more than 9, you know, 50, for example, then you can create some real traction with that, because there is strength. There is strength in numbers. That is absolutely the case. And that's why, with the first class action lawsuit that was filed by Stephen Silverman, who I interviewed on my show, and it airs in Edmonton, Stephen initially had his lead plaintiffs, about 7 or 10 of them. Rick Vive dropped out, but so Gary Lehman became the big name. But then they recruited another 200 players. So, yes, there is absolutely strength in numbers. But, again, there's no prerequisite that you consolidate claims.
Eric, I would imagine, too, it might help if you've got more names that are recognizable on the marquee, as was the case in this first lawsuit that was filed, as opposed to this group. Not to diminish any injuries they might have suffered, but, I mean, I know Dan Lacouture because he played as an Oiler, and I know the names because I cover the game for a living, but this isn't exactly a who's who. Does that have any effect in players that might follow to join in?
From a public perception standpoint, that is generally also part of the battle. If you have brand name players, and that inflicts more harm theoretically on the league because it's negative press associated with brand name players. You always hear the name Eric Lindros. If you ever join the lawsuit, you know that the lawsuit would get more attention and there'd be more dialogue around the lawsuit. And what a league wants to avoid is dialogue about a bad part of their game. That's why the NFL settled, or tried to settle, for nearly $1 billion. Now, as I said in July when they settled or announced settlement, the case wasn't settled and it wouldn't settle. And in fact, it hasn't. You'll have another 2,000 players or so filing their own lawsuits. So it does help if you have brand name players. But from purely a substantive standpoint, when you're in court, it doesn't matter whether they're brand name players or not. What you're trying to show is, look at this player here, Pelozzo, for example. Look at him. He has suffered this damage. We want X amount of dollars based upon his damage. So it could help, but it's not necessary.
Eric Macarella, legal analyst for TSN, joins us. The NHL didn't say much in the first one. I don't expect them to say a lot in the second one either, Eric. But how concerned do you think the NHL will be? And when I read this claim, the thing that I found interesting was they say how the players weren't warned of the concerns and risks of concussion and still aren't. I definitely don't agree with the still aren't now. It's pretty obvious that the NHL is making it clear for everybody out there the long-term effects of concussions. How much of the NHL will be kind of pre the big dollars being made, when maybe it wasn't as open and honest as it has been in the last 5 years?
First is a great point, because this lawsuit is about concealment. It's that the NHL information and didn't share with the players. And the thinking is, if they did share that information with the players could have made an informed decision as to whether they want to play or not. So you're right that concealment's a big issue. And nowadays, it's tough to argue that anyone is concealing anything, because the information is out there. So for more recent players, they're never going to really have a chance to file this type of lawsuit unless there's another smoking gun or something. For the older players, they are going to be able to rely on concealment as an allegation here. But the problem with that, Jason, is you have to prove it. It's one thing to sue, another thing to make out your case. And how do you show the NHL that it had information but concealed it? You know, in the NFL, there's anecdotal evidence that they did do that. And even then, the lawsuits dragged on for years, and they've kind of settled. Here, you know, unless you have a smoking gun, it's going to be very difficult to make out your case. And then the other hurdle that they're facing is this causation issue. You have to show that your brain trauma, that your brain damage was caused at the NHL level. Mm-hmm. And if you played, you know, 100, 200, or 300 games in the NHL, but you also played 300, 400, 500 games in other leagues, the minor leagues in Europe, how can you say with any type of certainty that the brain damage you are now suffering from, the permanent brain damage, is a result of playing in the NHL? Good luck. That is tough to do.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, some of these players had relatively limited National Hockey League careers where on their way up, counting the minors and junior, they may have 200, 300, 400 games. And the other thing with concealment, Eric, maybe definition-wise, if a team's, unless you've got a note from a medical trainer saying, we know this is really bad, let's not tell the players, to oversimplify the point, if they just say, look, we didn't know how serious this was either 15 years ago, it's tough to prove they did, isn't it?
Absolutely. And if they say, look, we both, and this is the NHL's defense, we both had the same knowledge. Okay, so I didn't have any special knowledge that could ever support the position that your brain trauma or damage would be permanent. And so from that base, so if that's the argument and it sticks, then another legal principle kicks in, and that's the principle of consent. That when a player steps on the ice, he agrees to contact that's incidental to the game and agrees that if injury is inflicted on him, he agrees not to sue anybody, basically. So when you remove concealment from the equation, and if both sides have the same information and nothing has been concealed, well, you know what? The player actually now bears the responsibility and risk for his injuries because he knew what they knew, and when he stepped on the ice, guys, he agreed to it.
Eric, want to take that a little bit further. From a legal point of view, is it your opinion that, you know, a shoulder cap on the chin, the old keep your head up days, it was okay for the longest time, as long as you were taking the man clean. That's can be defined clearly as a part of the game. And how about the fighting part? Yes, you get penalized, but you don't necessarily get thrown out. Can that be seen as tied directly to the game, that's an acceptable level of contact?
Yeah, and, you know, that's the next great question. You know, even if the NHL is aware that, you know, now that permanent head trauma can be caused as a result of playing hockey, for example, fighting, do they now have a duty to remove that from the game? And that's the next question. This lawsuit also addresses that. And that's the big question. But, you know, head trauma is not only caused by way of fighting. As you said, there's other type of incidental contact in the game that can cause that type of head trauma. Mm-hmm. But now that we know the dangers associated with repeated headshots, and the players know that, it's tough to remove that. It's tough for the players to say that the NHL is ultimately responsible when now both sides know that this is a problem. It gets very, very sticky. You know, I've said on my show many times that I think that fighting is perishable because the risk associated, the liability associated with fighting is too great. You know, because it's not just that the NHL would win or lose in the lawsuits, that they're going to continue to be sued. So I do think the NHL will probably phase fighting out of the game because the risk associated with it is too great. But let's not forget, there's no out of bounds in hockey, and players are skating at, you know, high speeds, and it's not only contact, it's really a collision sport, and players are going to get hurt. You can hit someone in the chest and give them a concussion, hit them in the chin and give them a concussion. So it is an inherently dangerous sport. Players get that, and the more information they get about that, the tougher it is for them to sue.
Yeah, the thing about fighting, Erica, 2% of the concussions come from fighting. So it's not even there's so many bigger issues for them. To me, getting rid of fighting would only be served as one of the typical things in our society today. Well, we're going to try to appease people, but that's not going to make a difference. The fighting won't make a difference in the end when you look at concussions.
Yeah, you know, and it's such, but, you know, here's an interesting point, because I was thinking about this. I teach a sports law class at the university here, and the students present these papers. And you can imagine a couple of students were sort of presenting on this issue. And as I kind of looked through it and analyzed it for myself, what I realized is something new, at least for me, and that is that fighting itself, there is risk associated with it, absolutely. But because fighting is in the game, other stuff happens, like Bertuzzi on Moore, McSorley on Brashear, things like that. Trying to bait players into fighting. And there's contact that happens around fighting. And this is kind of a new thought for me, but there is that. And you have to wonder, if you remove fighting from the game, do you also remove some of these other instances? You know, Thornton on Orpik, when he pulled him from behind without Orpik being aware of it. You know, if there's no fighting in the game, does that happen? I don't know. I'm throwing it out there, guys.
Yeah, it's interesting. Although there are people who argue that if you take the fighting out of the game, you're just going to get more headshots by way of over-the-top hits and charges and hits from behind. You know, the frustration level, it's an emotional game. It's a game of passion. Some people argue at the university level where players have to wear cages and face masks that the sticks come up more often. I don't know what the numbers are, but you're going to get that argument.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know what the answer is to that as well. I know that other sports and other sports athletes can get equally annoyed and irate, you know, but there's no fighting because it's against the rules. I think in the NFL, there's no fighting because it's against the rules. At the same time, you often hear that hockey players need to police themselves. Well, that argument by itself for me doesn't really cut it, at least from a legal standpoint, because you know, there are rules in place and the ref should be doing, you know, a good job there. But the problem is, not the problem, the issue is the game is the way it is now. And if you want to remove fighting from the game, you can't do it instantaneously. You need to change the culture of the game. That takes a generation or two. Yeah. And there may not be an appetite to change the culture of the game. And some may not even think it's necessary. But I think the bottom line, though, is you need to call the rules as they're drafted and not allow the inmates to run the asylum. And I'm not being derogatory towards the players, referring to them as inmates or something less. It's just the expression that you don't let the inmates run the asylum. In no other sport do you allow players to police themselves. I'm not coming down on either side. I mean, I think generally those who listen offside know that I'm probably not entirely enchanted with the idea of fighting, maybe as I was before Bielak and Rippon and Bugard passed away, all pretty close to each other, and it certainly gave me pause. But right now, the way the game is constructed, fighting seems to be a part of it. And if you want to get it out, you need to change the entire culture of the game, because right now, it looks like it needs to stay in.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it at all. Eric, so what happens now? Quickly, we got about 30 seconds. What happens with this lawsuit moving forward?
Next thing is going to happen is the NHL will watch all the movies that are referenced in the actual complaint, so Youngblood and Friday the 13th, yeah. And then they're going to go to court and try and get this thing kicked out. They probably won't be successful. They're actually looking at the other lawsuit kicked out as well, but the changes will have to be made to this lawsuit. And then, like all the other concussion lawsuits, they're going to just kind of move really slowly, guys, like an iceberg, and there'll be nothing new on this for a year or two, really anything substantial, and more lawsuits I expect are going to be filed.
What's funny is they reference Youngblood and they don't even reference Slapshot. Like, seriously, if you're going to reference a hockey movie, reference the greatest one of all time.
Okay, you know what's funny?
Carlson.
Is when I saw the reference to Youngblood, I go, I wonder if Slapshot's in here. And I did, the lawyers who filed this did send me a copy where I could search. And it's actually in there.
Is it Slapshot? Okay.
Slapshot. Yeah, there is. But you see, we're on the same page, because without it, this thing would have no credibility at all.
Wow. I got to read what the reference is. Okay. Well, we'll check that one out. Eric, always good to talk to you. People can listen in tonight at 8 o'clock, hour straight of Macromella.
Yeah, I'm going to be covering the Pistorius. Got lots of clips from the trial. And just if the listeners can help me, I'm trying to get to 80 billion followers. So please follow me on Eric on Sports Law.
80 billion.
Wow. That's right.
It's good to have goals. It's good to have goals. I love it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks, Eric. Good talking to you.
All right, man. Take care.